Last week, a blogger for the Huffington Post wrote about the meaning of a term used often in academia, alma mater. That blogger is Eastern Kentucky University President Dr. Michael Benson. We'll learn more about his view of the nourishing mother as a place that gives birth to so many things in our lives. On this week's Eastern Standard, we'll discuss challenges facing the university during this academic year.
Come December 1, we'll know exactly what the metrics are, but we're starting the process now, kind of having an idea of what they might be, how we're going to be ready to roll this out for the next course offerings and degree offerings next year.
And we'll look forward to what's on the horizon and beyond for EKU. We're interested in your questions, comments, or personal stories for EKU President Michael Benson. Write to us by email at wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Post on the WEKU Facebook page. Send a tweet at WEKUEST. In just a few minutes, we'll open the phones as well. It's time for Eastern Standard, right after the latest news from NPR. From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. Hello, I am John Hingsbergen. And with us today, something that we do a number of times every year, and we're a little bit late getting started with this academic year. Eastern Kentucky University President Dr. Michael Benson is with us to interact with you, with your questions, your comments, your stories about EKU. And we're going to talk about things happening on campus, things on President Benson's mind and on your mind today. It's an interactive show, so we invite you to send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at WEKUEST, and you can see the latest selfie, not quite selfie, but taken by our student producer, Brian Burkhart, of Dr. Benson and myself here getting ready for the program. That is on Twitter right now, and you'll find it if you follow Dr. Benson at EKUPrez, I believe, is your Twitter.
With a Z, yes, sir.
With a Z. And, of course, welcome, Michael Benson. Thanks for being with us once again.
Always good to be with you, John. Thank you.
Busy, busy times, the beginning of an academic year. We're really almost a month into the academic year. The convocation address a number of weeks ago. A lot of things happening on campus, a lot of construction going on campus, and there's actually some reconstruction going on campus. A project that was really, I guess, the pedway, the pedestrian walkway across Lancaster Avenue built about, I guess it was 3 years ago. I remember when that went up. And actually, it was the cover photo on the WEKU Eastern Standard Twitter account in all its glory, lit up at night. And then we had an incident with that last week. It's been in the news. Why don't we talk first about that, since that's something that's on a lot of people's minds and one of the things that has brought the name EKU into the headlines in the last week or so.
Well, you're exactly right about the pedway. I was actually at a fundraiser on Friday when I got a call from Barry Pointer telling me that about, 11:45, what had happened. And I want to start by saying that we are so incredibly fortunate and grateful that no one was in the pedway at the time. I drive underneath it multiple times every day, and I see countless students up there. And the fact that nobody was traversing Lancaster at that particular moment when the truck hit it, we are so very, very fortunate. So
that would be affected by the fact that it occurred on a Friday, right? I mean, had it been a Thursday, Wednesday, Tuesday, Monday?
Yeah. Friday, you know, Friday morning, still, I've talked to one student that had been just exited, and I understand from our police that there was a student underneath the pedway at the time, and then, of course, there was a vehicle, a private vehicle, that was passing underneath, and her back window was kind of broken out. Mm. But still in all, you know, as my mom used to say, you can replace anything. You can't replace people. And safety for our students is our paramount interest and concern. And that's why we're talking about an additional pedway, of course, with the proper height that will go across the bypass. But our intent, you've probably seen it today. They removed the truck yesterday, and they've shored up the pedway now with kind of a temporary infrastructure underneath it. And we have structural engineers over there every single day trying to determine if the towers are sound structurally. And from what we're hearing, and the initial indications are that they are. And so once we kind of shear off the middle section, we'll figure out what it will take to rebuild it.
And it's covered by insurance. It's not going to cost the Eastern or the students or the community of Richmond anything.
I noticed that Bill Bryant, a friend of mine, picked up a tweet because I got a tweet from a student saying, will my tuition go up? And I responded, absolutely not. We can't control tuition all the time, but tuition will not go up to cover this. An insurance claim will cover the damage.
Well, let's segue from one pedway to the other. I mean, the planned pedway across the Eastern Bypass was a project announced just in the last number of weeks, and sounds like an exciting project. So everything is still on target, and this incident is not going to affect that future project.
Not at all. And just so folks know, too, the pedway on Lancaster has the kind of required clearance. And the truck operator in this instance left his boom up, and that's what struck it. So the one across the bypass was actually, the idea was brought to us by the student government leaders this year, Colin Potter and his associates. And they said this was a top priority for them in terms of connecting south and north campuses, and also, more importantly, providing a safer passage for students that come from Keene Hall, Business and Technology, the Center for the Arts, to connect them to the alumni lot and then into the middle of campus. So we have a request for proposal out there right now about the design of it and construction, but we intend to undertake that project still and have it done in time for next academic year.
Wow. Just a year from now.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And the concept, the campus is, well, it's been called Campus Beautiful for years, and beautification of the Campus Beautiful has seemed to been to be on target in the last couple of years. It seems somewhat coincidental with the presidency of Michael Benson as you came in on in August of 2013. Is there a relationship between your role as president and the fact that all these projects are moving forward?
Well, I'm flattered when people tell me that they haven't seen this much kind of physical infrastructure activity since Robert R. Martin, and I'll never kind of stack up to him.
You'll never get your name on a bypass?
I don't think so, nor do I aspire to. He was here for 16 years, and look at the way that campus was built up. Some have pointed out, too, that the advantage he had during that time was a lot of that funding, if not all, came from either state or federal government sources. We've had to be a little more creative. It's true that my first year here, we were able to get the phase two funding for the science building, which was our number one priority. But then as we looked at our residence halls, as we looked at our dining facility, as we looked at our student union, our rec center, we recognized that the only way we were going to kind of refreshen campus. And this is not about aesthetics. This is about keeping up with the competition out there and providing students what they demand. I meet with students all the time, and I would encourage our faculty and staff, many of whom already do so, but to, if they see a student group out there taking a tour, you know, stop and talk to them and ask them, what are you looking for? Yes, they're looking for an academic program in particular, but they're also paying attention to the residence halls, to what kind of, is the campus safe? Is it safe to ride a bike? Is it safe to navigate on foot? Do they have kind of the accoutrements that they expect? Do they have the study spaces they want? Do they have the kind of social aggregating spots that they want in campus? Do they have the rec center that they're after? So we knew that the campus needed to be updated, and we had to figure out a way to do it without state appropriations because, as you know, the only appropriation we've gotten for a facility in the last 3.5 years is for the science building. Our number one capital project moving forward is the Model Lab School, and I think we'll probably talk about that later. But these other projects that you see going on are from a wholly different kind of pot of money. It's not our appropriation. It's not state funding. It's either projects paid for with a student fee, with public-private partnerships, or with our corporate partners such as Aramark that's building the new dining facility. So we've tried to be creative, and if you add it all up, it's about $220 million worth of projects going on right now.
Eastern Kentucky University President Michael Benson is with us for this week's Eastern Standard, and you are welcome to be with us as well by calling 800-621-8890. You can send an email to wekueasternstandard@gmail.com, send a tweet at wekuest, or send a message on the Facebook page or the WEKU website. Those things tend to be best used after the program for interaction, after we post the audio and get this onto Facebook. But I would recommend send a tweet at WEKU-EST. Send an email or call 800-621-8890. Dr. Benson, I mean, you're an academic, a historian. How do you feel about being in the position of always having to deal with some of these mundane matters and being a Pedway reconstruction or campus improvements and so forth? How does that fit into your picture as your career as an academic and your ideals and your goals?
Well, this fall semester marks my 21st year in public higher education, my 16th year as a president. So believe me, John, I've dealt with just about everything. Now, it may be on a different scale from the three different campuses where I've been the chief executive. So I would never refer to anything as mundane, because if someone calls my office or sends me an email about an issue, to them that issue is paramount. And it really kind of falls to me, if something comes to my office, chances are they've tried to resolve it or address it at another level and it maybe hasn't happened. And so they come to me. Now, I'm a little more accessible via Twitter, and that can be a good and a bad thing, because students send me things all the time about, I can't find a parking place or the toilet on my residence hall dorm room floor doesn't work. And I then follow up and send it to facilities or to the appropriate party. But I try my best to be accessible and to address issues as they come up. My mom used to say, bloom where you're planted, and that means dealing with everything that comes with the job. And I've found here that people have liked the idea that they can go directly to the president. Sure, there is a chain of command as it relates to academic policies, and so I don't get involved with a course grade or something else. I always refer it back to kind of where it needs to be dealt with on that particular level. But as it relates to parking or the pedway or safety issues on campus, I really like to be as involved as I possibly can and try and come up with solutions.
Were the campus improvements part of the mission given to you when you were hired by the Board of Regents 3 years ago?
Yeah, if you heard about our Turner Gate dedication, I told the story that it was after we had been here since August. In that fall, in October, we did a fun kind of a donor recognition event of the College of Science. And after the event, Craig Turner and his wife Madonna got in the car with my wife Debbie and me, and we drove around campus. And I pointed out where I thought we could start making some real improvements, whether it's taking down a dorm and replacing it with a new residence hall or improving the curb appeal here, or what about a new facility here. And it was that particular night that Craig and I decided that if we could be aggressive, we could kind of be bold and forward-thinking, and that we had this window of opportunity. And so as things have happened and things have worked out, in point of fact, we've been able to accomplish some things I think no one thought we were able to do. So I certainly can't take all the credit, because it's been a team effort. But through the board chair support, the board support, and a very willing group of colleagues on campus and the private partners that we've employed and engaged, I think it's worked out very, very well.
There's a discussion underway right now dealing with finances, and we're not going to get into it until we come back from our station break. But there was an announcement that 21 academic programs were being considered for elimination or suspension because of financial considerations. We want to talk a little bit about that and about how President Benson and the Eastern Board of Regents are dealing with the financial realities, the current issues of funding available from the Commonwealth of Kentucky and other sources. We're interested in your questions, your comments, your personal stories. Alumni or students from Eastern Kentucky University, jump on board. President Michael Benson is with us, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Send a tweet at WEKU EST. That phone number, 800-621-8890. We'd love to talk with you during this week's Eastern Standard on WEKU. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. At the top of the program, I mentioned that a recent blog in the Huffington Post addressed the topic of alma mater, the nourishing mother. And the author, the blogger of that piece in the Huffington Post is Eastern Kentucky University President Michael Benson. And Let's break away from the mundane matters of pedways and campus construction and talk a little bit about philosophy and the academic issues or the underlying concept of alma mater, the nourishing mother. Dr. Benson, I know you write regularly, what, a number of times a year for the Huffington Post?
I try and do an article a quarter, and I noticed the transition there, John. You went from Baby Light My Fire to alma mater, so that was a smooth triage.
That's
there.
That's just as public radio for you, you know, eclectic tastes and people whose minds are constantly active.
I mean, in all seriousness, when they contacted me, this was, what, 3 or 4 years ago, about 4 years ago, and they said, we'd like you to be one of our featured higher education writers, and they'd read some of my things, and I was flattered, and I said, well, what do you want? And they said, you can write about whatever you choose to write about. So if something strikes me, if, you know, there's an issue that I've thought about or something I'd like to comment on, I thought about this article I have for a while because of the rhythm that comes with the higher education calendar. Excuse me, and I mentioned that in the article, that when the fall semester starts, we all kind of in higher ed in the academy kind of get into this flow of things. And the beauty of a place like an Eastern Kentucky University and any college campus for that matter is I don't know of another entity that brings together so many disparate sorts of people all unified in support of an institution. They can be different creeds, races, colors, political persuasions, sexual orientations, whatever, but they all come together in support of an entity, in this case, the alma mater, the nourishing mother. You know, what does that mean? And I try to, in my article, kind of underscore the fact that the Latin should not be lost on us, that when you think about your biological birth mother, the one that brought you into this world and gave you life, that's kind of the physical birth, obviously, that all of us go through. But the intellectual, the personal, the social, the physical kind of rebirth, if you will, that happens to a young person and a non-traditional student that finds his or her way, maybe after they've had quite a bit more life experience and they come back to school, the alma mater means so much to them because it was that place that launched this new self, this new birth, if you will, and sets people on a career path and on a personal path to making friends and having experiences that you get no other way and in no other place. Excuse me. So that's kind of what the crux of the article, and that's what I try to communicate.
I mean, the alma mater, we're talking Latin, we're talking an old fogey kind of a concept. I mean, it's the kind of thing that I would imagine a lot of young college students today come in at 18 years old and go, what is this kind of stuff? Do you feel that when college students come to school at Eastern or other schools today, they're open to hearing discussions of these kinds of issues and where does that fit in to making a person into a whole person and a contribution to their liberal arts education or pursuit of the humanities and so forth? Are we better persons no matter what career? If we're planning to be an accountant and sit in a cubicle someday and tally up numbers and spreadsheets, are we better off for having exposed ourselves to some of these concepts and thinking beyond ourselves?
Absolutely.
That was a softball question.
Yeah, it was kind of rhetorical, and I answer with emphatic absolutely yes. When I met with the freshman class, and I really want to tip my cap to our student success people, because the Big E Welcome Week this go-around, I think, was one of the best I've ever seen in terms of the programming and the participation. And we launched on Thursday night with the Turner Gate dedication. And I'm a firm believer that campuses need to have kind of iconic landmarks or kind of elements within a campus that have a tradition that link a student to that campus. And so the idea with the Turner Gate, and Craig is the one that picked out, along with his wife Madonna, the words that are inscribed on the front and on the back of the gate. And as you approach the gate from Lancaster and Barnes Mill, it says wisdom and knowledge. So you enter to get knowledge, you hope that develops into wisdom. And on the back side, as you exit campus, it says passion and purpose. And Craig talked about it at the dedication that we want students to leave here after they've attained that wisdom and knowledge with a passion and a purpose to go out and make a difference. I tell students all the time, you are so incredibly fortunate to be where you are, to have access to education when billions in the world will never have that privilege or that opportunity. And it then falls to you, the onus falls to you to do something with it, to leave this place and be committed to making a difference, whatever you go into. Like you said, it could be accounting, it could be forensic chemistry, it could be social science, psychology, history, whatever. But you do whatever you can to prepare yourself to go out in the world and make an indelible impression for good.
Eastern Kentucky University President Michael Benson is with us for this week's Eastern Standard. Your questions, your comments for President Benson, your personal stories of your college experiences, whether you're in school right now or long out of school, as some of us are, 800-621-8890. You can write to us by email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com, or send a tweet at WEKUEST. That phone number once again, and we'd love to hear your voice at 800-621-8890. And President Benson, we did have a call before the program. We frequently, before the show, toss out to listeners. Feel free to call in and leave a message before the show. And a listener did not give her name, but she had a question about your vision for the Model Lab School, and she specifically referenced facility improvements for that school. That school, I wish I would have had access to a school like that when my children were of school age, and I did not have access to it. I know a lot of universities provided this kind it was both a service to the community as well as a learning experience.
Right.
Where does the Model Lab School fit into the picture here at Eastern?
Well, a couple of things. I take my kids there every day, and this has nothing to do with my own children. And they're privileged to go there, and they have a wonderful experience. But this has been around, the Model Lab School, since 1906. And as you know, it's the last remaining one in the Commonwealth and one of the few really in the region. When I drop my children off, often see our own College of Education students with their visitor badges on, and they are either there observing, learning, trying to learn put into practice the latest procedures and pedagogies that they've talked about in their courses. So it really is this incubator where our students can come from their classes and try out what they've been learning on these students. It's almost kind of that bench to bedside as it relates to medical or to medicine and triage treatment. Her reference to the facility, I see that cornerstone every day, 1960. And it is fraught with all sorts of problems. It's an old building, and 56 years old. And so now we are faced with the task of convincing the legislature that it's a worthy investment to build a new facility that I believe could be the epicenter of teacher and principal and superintendent training for the entire Commonwealth. We would like to see Model develop into a place where if you need to get recertified, if you want to come learn about the latest techniques and pedagogies, you come to Model Lab and you use that as your, as it were, laboratory. I've talked to one of our faculty members, Tom Shelton, about a superintendent academy where we could train the next generation of leaders that are going to get into administration. As I've said before, you know, college presidents are getting older. The same goes for principals and superintendents. And so it falls to us to kind of raise up and train that next generation of great teachers, of great administrators, and I can't think of a better place to do it than our Model Lab School.
You mentioned the legislature, so any improvements, expansions of the service, as well as the improvements of the facility would require state funding? We just don't have that. How much money are we talking about?
Well, the numbers varied, and this was our number one priority for the last session. Of course, we're in an off year now, so when we get prepared to go up there in 2018, this will continue to be our number one priority. But it also has a new College of Ed building attached to it. And the total dollar amount, if I remember correctly, I think it was $87, $88 million. So it's a substantial investment, but we've got to make a compelling case of why the legislature support this. If we're committed to improving teacher education and our K-12 experience for all of our young people, why not use the Model Lab as this epicenter of training and example of what can be done?
Now, this is an example of funding that would be related to capital improvements.
Correct.
To facilities. Meanwhile, funding for general operations has been reduced.
It has.
To Eastern and other schools in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, and the regents are working on that. Again, I think I used in the beginning of the program a soundbite of you referring to the fact that we're going to know something about a plan by December of this year. Talk about where we stand in terms of the academic programs, the existing programs at Eastern, and how they're being affected by state funding.
So just kind of a little quick primer on our budget. Our budget at EKU is north of about $350 million. So it comes from different sources. You have a state appropriation, you collect tuition and fees, you have grants and contracts, and then you have auxiliary revenue that you generate through housing and through meal plans and that sort of thing. So the cut that we've taken and that we've kind of forced to subsume is the 4.5% cut that the governor issued and the legislature supported. We fought tooth and nail to try and get that down from 9%, that was the original proposal, and even get it reduced down to zero, but we had to take a cut. And of course, looming large over all of our heads is this pension issue, and for a lot of folks, this is the motivation or the justification, as it were, for the cuts that we're having to take. As you know, K-12 was not cut, but we were.
Now, when we talk about that 4.5% cut, it's not of $350 million.
No, it's of the $68
million 68,
that
okay.
we get from our state appropriation. So that's what? It reduces it down to $63 million. So that's still a substantial amount of money. So as we looked at our budget, we said this year we're going to try and fill the hole with one-time funds of about $7 million. But moving forward, we're going to have to plug that hole with recurring dollars and take that $7 million cut, as if you will. On top of that, as you know, John, they've talked about this performance-based funding, and the governor originally proposed that 100% of our funding go into that performance-based pool. That's been windowed down to 25%. I've been part of this working group that's looking at the metrics to determine how that funding will be allocated. But we have to then earn back a portion of our state appropriation based on what they will hold us to in terms of retention rates or graduation rates or et cetera, et cetera. There's a proposal out there now that we base it more on what we're all about, and that's about degree attainment. That's our number one priority, is retention and graduation. So we're grappling with how we're going to come up with this recurring $7 million cut, and that's why we have we're looking at everything from the program suspensions to changes in our healthcare, to outsourcing of various functions on campus, cuts to athletics. Nothing is off limits, and we're looking at everything.
Where is that process right now? I know, again, there was an announcement of 21 programs. A listing was put out there, and I mean, among them, I know our journalism was among them, geography, French, and I don't have that entire list in front of me. How was that list determined, and I understood at that time that was not a definitive list, that list could change.
Yes. Quickly, I'll give you kind of a summation of it. Last spring, when this all kind of came to us, when the legislature determined what was going to happen with our budget, we knew that we had to do something. A lot of other campuses just made the decision, we're going to cut this, we're going to freeze all positions, we'll just do away with this or that. We decided to be a little more deliberative and have a more kind of a participatory process. So, as I said, we fixed this year with the one-time funds, but moving forward, we said we're going to look at all of our programs. We had a committee that worked throughout the summer, one that was charged really with an examination of our academic programs. They came back with recommendations, and on Monday, today's Thursday, on Monday, we had almost 4.5-hour faculty senate meeting, during which the programs that were on that suspension list were able to present how they may respond to getting off that list, or how they can increase the number of graduates, or how they can be even more sustainable and more viable. And I have to tell you, I came away very encouraged that I told folks at the outset, we're surrounded by really, really smart people. I mean, faculty and staff at EKU are very accomplished. They're very astute. And so let's ask them what ideas they have. And so they came forward. These faculty members and staff members came forward with some great ideas. The Council on Academic Affairs is meeting today. Our Board of Regents has scheduled special meetings every single month. They usually meet once a quarter, but we've met every month since April. They're meeting again next week. And come December, we've got to make some decisions as to what we are going to do to meet that $7 million cut that I talked about.
And we should toss that out there to our listeners. If listeners have reactions, comments about those funding pressures and ideas for how the university could increase revenue as well as make cuts, or just reactions to the whole political and the logistical environment that the university and the other universities in the Commonwealth are in, feel free to be part of our conversation. President Michael Benson of Eastern Kentucky University here with us, 800-621-8890. The show is live on Thursday morning, so if you're listening on Thursday morning, we are here right now for your question, your comment, or your personal story about your experience in college at Eastern Kentucky University or elsewhere, and you know, the issues of state funding and state support for academics, for the academic programs and for education in the Commonwealth. 800-621-8890, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Send a tweet at WEKUEST. Now, President Michael Benson here with us on this week's program. You mentioned issues, you know, that will affect faculty and staff, healthcare, and things of that nature. Many universities went through a lot of pressures in the what is apparently now called the Great Recession of 2008-2009. Eastern seemed to weather that reasonably well compared to some other schools and some other institutions. Is there any, you know, relationship of this current financial situation to that situation of 7 or 8 years ago, or are we, you know, like catching up to where some others had those pressures, or is this just part of, well, again, you mentioned the pension system in the state and the political environment. How does Eastern react to the political environment? Can we talk a little bit about how the school interacts with state government, the legislators, and the governor, and so forth in Frankfurt on such matters?
Well, first off, we're fortunate to have very able legislators that represent us here. We meet with the governor. The presidents have met with the governor on multiple occasions during the last session. We also, of course, go to hearings in the interim. On Monday, I've been summoned to go to one of our subcommittee hearings and kind of report on how we've met the mandates for the cuts. So they keep very close tabs on what we're doing and how we're doing it. I can't speak to what EKU did 7 or 8 years ago because I wasn't here, but I know the reallocation through which the university passed in 2013 kind of put us in solid financial standing. We were able to do some things that maybe some other campuses weren't able to do. That said, you know, our benefits packages, our tuition waivers, all those sorts of things we've said we were going to consider and examine. We decided to hold the line on the tuition benefit, for example, because the one commodity that we can provide people is that access to education. I feel very, very strongly about that we should allow those employees and their dependents to come to school if they want to. But it sounds to me like the music's coming up, and I'm happy to talk about it more after the break.
We will come back to that issue and back to your questions, your comments. Michael, for a tweet, thank you for sending a tweet. We'll respond to Michael's question in just a moment. You can write to us by Twitter at WEKUEST. Send an email, WEKUEasternstandard@gmail.com, or give us a call, 800-621-8890. When some outbreaker tries to put me down and says his school is great, I tell him right away, now what's the matter, buddy? Ain't you heard of my school? It's number one in the state. So be true to your school. It's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations, and we have the president of the school of Eastern Kentucky University, Michael Benson, with us for the next 20 minutes on this Thursday morning to respond to your questions, your comments, your personal stories at 800-621-8890. Send a tweet at WEKUEST or send an email, WEKUEasternstandard@gmail.com. Thank you for being part of the program. And we're going to get to a tweet from listener Michael. But we're talking about the pressures and the decision-making process of the Board of Regents and where we stand in that process at this point.
Well, the Regents have charged us with several things. We came to them with a whole list of things of possible areas where we could consider efficiencies and reductions, and they came back to us and said, we want you to do A, B, C, D. And so they're our governing board, and we take our direction from them. And so at the meeting on Wednesday of next week, we'll present kind of our findings as it relates to changes to our healthcare plan and what savings that may accrue, what impact that will have on employees. They want the full report on other things, such as the RFP for some other things that we've put out, in addition to the program review. And at their December meeting, what I understand, the timing, and we've talked a lot about the timeline moving forward, because there are policies in place as it relates to programs and faculty and staff, but they want to make some decisions of where we're going to make some of these reductions by December the 5th. So that's where we are. And as I said, time has not been our friend, because all of this happened. Of course, it came down in April, and we decided that we could cover this year. But moving forward, we wanted to make sure people felt like they were a part of the process. I would argue, and some may disagree, and that's their right, but I would argue that we've had more participatory, transparent process than probably every other campus.
Well, that was my next question. How transparent is the process? Are all of these meetings open to the public? When is it not open for public interaction, or at least public observance? I guess interaction is another matter.
Now, we pay very close attention to the Kentucky Open Meetings requirements. As you know, there are issues as it relates to other institutions right now. We've had three new board members join the board just in the last few weeks. They've undergone rigorous training as it relates to that. We're very clear as to what we can and can't discuss in closed session. But everything that's in open session, everybody's invited, the public's invited to come and participate and observe. And as I said, our next meeting is next Wednesday at, I think, at 9 or 10 a.m. We anticipate a larger crowd, so we're actually going to do it at the Center for the Arts on the stage.
What's on your mind regarding Eastern Kentucky University about funding for the academic programs and other programs at Eastern Kentucky University and other universities in the Commonwealth of Kentucky? What about other practical matters? Is there something that you want to interact with the president about? Maybe your own experience in school, maybe students who are part of the community, or those who are otherwise involved, faculty, staff at Eastern Kentucky University. You're in Hazard, you're in Corbin, you're in Pineville. Do you care about what goes on at Eastern Kentucky University? You're listening to this station provided as a service of Eastern Kentucky University. Feel free to jump on board at 800-621-8890. You can send a tweet at WEKUEST, and that's how Michael got in touch with us. He writes, "What about ways of increasing revenue without raising tuition?" And he says, for example, 200 more international students would generate $4 million in tuition. Michael has apparently done some math here to work that out.
Well, before I get to that, you mentioned why this what happens here should be of import or interest to our service area. Our freshman class, John, which was our second largest in history, second to last year, 91% of our freshman class are from Kentucky. And of that 91% of Kentuckians, half are from our service region. So what happens in Richmond is of interest, I would hope, to everybody in our service area and in the Commonwealth. I mean, we are, in many ways, Kentucky's university. That's the highest percentage of Kentucky students of any public institution. So something we're very proud of. I mean, we service the state, and we churn out graduates, and many of whom end up staying here and working with their EKU degrees.
Too, and that's kind of a reverse of the brain drain, holding on to the talent. Now, something that, and I don't want to lose Michael's question, but you mentioned frequently, President Benson, in your convocation address and elsewhere, the number of people who are first-time college students, maybe the first member of their family to go to school. I'm always inspired by some of the stories that I hear of students at Eastern where this is the first time someone from their family has stepped into higher education.
You and I both, and that's my favorite thing at graduation, to ask those first-generation college students to stand up and to see the families with, in many instances, tears coming down their faces as they applaud their student. And yes, it's changed that individual's life, but think about the subsequent generations, that once he or she has succeeded and done well and earned that degree, that is an example to everybody who we hope will follow, and that pattern of transformation continues forward. You know, to Michael's point about international students, we have a robust international student population. Sure, I'd like it to be larger, and we participate, like a lot of other schools, in very active international student recruitment. They really come for programs. I mean, whether it's our fire safety program or our nurse practitioner or whatever the program might be, we have to have those programs that are appealing. And it's true. They do pay full freight, and they come here, and they're a very important part of our community because it adds to the diversity of our student population. Think about how much a Kentucky student would learn, and vice versa for a student from Abu Dhabi, for example, to sit in a class together. And maybe it's the first time those two students have met an individual from that respective country or that county. And think about the holistic experience that one has in meeting people that think and act and believe differently than you do. And so I'm a big believer. I had the privilege of living overseas for 7 years, Israel, England, and Italy. And that changed my life. It changed my worldview forever.
I mean, speaking of worldview, we don't want to step too much into politics and so forth, but again, in your convocation address, you spoke about the academy as a place for civil public dialogue. I'm not quoting you well, about a place where we can discuss politics, a place where we can take on the issues of the world, where we can interact, even though we have differing views. And in this year's presidential election, not an easy time for our country with some of what is going on publicly right in front of our children.
Yeah, and quite frankly, John, it's embarrassing. I mean, I don't remember any sort of political season to be so shrill and untoward. And again, I won't get into the candidates, but the quote that I used was from Daniel Coit Gilman, who was the first president of Johns Hopkins University, who in 1876 said the academy should make four, and then he went through this kind of litany of things that we should address. And the last one, which I said, obviously we have been an abject failure in living up to Dr. Gilman's charge, and that was to make for less folly in politics. As you know, we were one of the final sites to host a presidential debate, and we lost out. We'll certainly try again if we can afford it in the future. But a university should be a place where the exchange, the robust exchange of ideas and opinions should be cultivated and harbored and encouraged, always in a civil environment. You and I can have completely divergent perspectives on things. But I respect you as an individual, and I respect the fact that you can have those ideas, and I can respectfully disagree and express my own self, my own opinions and views, and do it in a cordial and a civil way. And I think that's really, really important for the academy to continue to foster that environment.
We were talking about the cost of a college education, university funding, and ways to address financial matters. A news story that we just covered here on WEKU in the last 24 hours, Berea College made a presentation before the House Committee in Washington about college education costs and their unique funding model.
Yeah.
No one pays tuition at that school, only 15, 20 minutes away from this campus at Eastern Kentucky University. Where does something like that fit into the picture of this very complex funding structure that makes higher education possible for students?
Well, I'm the first to tout the uniqueness and I think just absolutely brilliant model that Berea has. And sure, they've been around since the 1850s, and Lyle Rollins there has become a very good friend, and he's a big supporter of what we're doing, and likewise we feel the same way. But you know, few schools can have that model because they have it done so well, where yes, you go and work. And when I went to their graduation last year, I asked somebody, how many of these students today are going to graduate with little to no debt? And the response was probably close to 60 to 70%. You know, some have to take out some loans for living expenses, but because they work, because they don't pay tuition, they leave unencumbered with, unfortunately, what some of our students are leaving with today. And I'm proud of the fact that we try our very, very best at EKU to graduate students with as little as possible of undergraduate debt. I went into debt for both my graduate degrees, and that was the best investment I could have made. And I tell students all the time, if you have to take out those loans for those graduate programs, you know, if that's what you want to do, you've got to do it. But our goal is to try and make it as affordable and accessible as possible.
Eastern Kentucky University President Michael Benson here for another 6 or 7 minutes on Eastern Standard. 800-621-8890 is the number. You're welcome to interact with President Benson with your question, your comment, your personal story, but you better act quickly because we are running out of time. The show live on Thursday morning. If you tune in on Sunday evening, it's amazing how many people tune in Sunday evening and want to be part of a program that was live a few days earlier. But this is your opportunity. 800-621-8890. President Benson, where are we going to go on this whole issue of funding for college education for students? What is the future in this country? Is there some innovative thinking that's going to make it more possible for people to get a college education without going into debt?
You and I have talked about this before, John, I think off air, but my co-author Hal Boyd and I are finishing up a book right now that we hope will be published by University Press of Kentucky in the spring about College for the Commonwealth, Why American Democracy Needs Higher Education. And our country is based on this idea that all of us benefit from an educated populace. And our founding fathers up through Abraham Lincoln and the Morrill Land Grant Act of 1862, through the GI Bill of 1944, those things have transformed our society, and I would argue are two of the greatest public policies that our country has ever passed, next to probably the Civil Rights Act, that changed forever our country and access to education. And what we're seeing is unfortunately, a de-emphasis on the part of states and the federal government on the importance of education. It's almost treated as if access to education is a privilege as opposed to a right, and the collateral benefits that come from investing in education, investing in people, in human capital, really accrue to all of us. And so we are going to continue to kind of beat that drum and say to our legislators, yes, we understand there are encumbrances on our budget, and social programs are important, and of course health care. All these things are important, but we provide the panacea to all those society ills that we then throw money at to try and cure. Education is the one thing that can fix it, and I'm going to keep trying to be an advocate for that and a proponent that more supportive education is absolutely vital to the sustenance and to the betterment of our democratic republic.
One of the things we have not spoken about is the failure of ITT Tech, shutting down, I don't know how many of their, how many facilities, their entire operation, I guess, shut down, a for-profit educational institution. Where does that fit into the picture? What does that tell you? What observations do you have about that? And then likewise, how are the institutions, public universities and other institutions going to help make up and take care of those students who began an education that is now kind of stopped on the tracks?
Yeah, and that's the most unfortunate part, because my guess is so many of them took out loans with a hope, with a view toward finishing that degree, and now they've had to hit that pause button. I won't get into kind of my own philosophy about for-profits, but we've tried our best to accommodate those students. We did the same thing with St. Catharines, the college in kind of central Kentucky that had to close its doors, and we've thrown open our doors and say, if there's a program that you want, we're going to do everything we can to facilitate your transferring to our campus as seamlessly as possible, and we'll take all comers.
I mean, what happens there? I mean, the credits, I know, are generally not transferable.
Well, it depends. I mean, obviously, we have academic policies, and those credits have to be able to kind of coalesce with what we accept and what we expect. So, I can't speak to individual cases, but I can tell you that we'll try our best to accommodate all those students.
What's on the horizon for Eastern right now besides the current funding issues? Are there projects or things happening in the next number of months that you're proud of and that just aren't getting publicity because we're so caught up in the news media with pedways and funding issues?
Well, we have to, as they say, first things first. We got to focus on what's really, really important, and our budget and our future is paramount. Putting the institution on sound financial footing moving forward. But some of the other projects that are coming online are new residence halls, the Carl Loftus Garden, the Aramark Dining Facility. All these things are going to change forever the face of EKU and make us even more appealing. A colleague of mine was at another campus in Kentucky, and she emailed me over while she was there and said, I wish everybody from Richmond could come and see this campus and see what they've done to it and see what our competition is doing. Because at times we tend to get a little insular and maybe focused and myopically on what's in front of us, where we lose sight of the big picture. And it's an aggressive market out there, and if we don't have what students want, guess what? Their tuition dollars are portable, and they will go elsewhere. And we got to keep our enrollment stable, which I'm very happy to report. We didn't talk about that. It is. We're just where we were last year, and our online continues to grow, but we're doing fine. I mean, we're going to, you know, stiff upper lip. We'll be all right.
Now, tuition was increased a small amount for this year, the 2016-2017 academic year?
Yeah, not, I wouldn't say small. It was a 5% because, okay. Of course, we had to deal with the cut that the legislature gave us. So, but I tell my colleagues in the President's Council, people will take cues from us, and if we're stoop-shouldered and kind of down in the mouth, they're going to maybe imitate that. We've got to be, hey, the future is bright, and it's a great time to be a colonel.
A last-minute email that slides in here, which is perhaps not fair to give you enough time to respond. What are your thoughts on rising administrative wages in the face of tuition costs? Why do university presidents get paid comparable to U.S. senators or even the president?
Well, I well, they
not fair.
But well, it requires I think a response, and that is the market pretty much demands that places be competitive, and those salaries are really set by hiring committees and. You see it in every single industry, and I'm certainly we've done all we can to get our staff and faculty salaries more comparable to up to peer of CUPA, which is a national organization that gives us data on where our professors and our staff salaries need to be, and we've made significant strides forward recently in on those fronts as well.
Thank you to those who have written in, sent a tweet or even called and left a message for this week's Eastern Standard. President Michael Benson is president of Eastern Kentucky University, and we'll have you back here in a few months, get an update as we get a little further into the academic year. Good luck in this process. Perhaps we'll get an update. We should put on our schedule an update after the decisions of the Board of Regents about dealing with the academic programs and the funding for those programs.
I'll look forward to being with you again, John. You always do a great job. You're very prepared.
Well, we're grateful for your openness and transparency and willingness to be part of our program. Eastern Standard is a production of Eastern Kentucky University, WEKU at Eastern Kentucky University. Our program is produced with the help of student producers Marissa Hempel, Brian Burkhart, and Grant Willoughby. Brian Bartlett is at the controls. I'm John Hingsbergen, encouraging you to write to us anytime, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com.